This interview is for the Veterans History Project of the Library of Congress American Folklife Center, and it is with Lloyd Chester Lane, and Lane is spelled L-A-I-N. Mr. Lane was in the U.S. Navy, serving from November 11, 1942 to December 20, 1946. Today is Friday, March 7, 2008. My name is Harriet Williamson. Henry Radcliffe is the Director of Sound and Lighting and is also the videographer. We are in the television studio of WILL in Urbana, Illinois, on the University of Illinois campus. Also in the studio is Mr. Lane's wife, Alice Lillian Watson Lane. Thank you so much for being with us, Mr. Lane, today. I wanted to find out a little bit about your background, about where you were born and raised, and your parents. And
I was born not too far from here on Row Mine, 1200 Row Mine those days, 1923, mm-hmm. December. And my father at that, I don't know what he was doing at that time. But anyway, my mother died when I was 10 months old. There was three children. And I can remember being on Hickory Street in the first grade. And I remember him coming home probably 1929. I'm laid off. Everything crashed. I guess he was something to do with groceries or something. Mm-hmm. And I can remember that. And then later on, let's see, I was 29. Then I was in school 1930, November, Thanksgiving vacation. I was with my aunt and uncle over here on Water Street at that time. And anyway, we was going to the Quality Bakery. Anyway, I slipped and broke this hair. And my cousin tried to get me to walk, because I couldn't, you know. And anyway, a man carried me back. And doctor come out, I guess. Anyway, they put a thing on here, broke an orange crate, you know, so to keep it straight. Well, my father was, that time, he was an invalid. He had a stroke. Well, he fell and struck his head, and like a stroke, cut him in half. I think I was seven. Anyway, believe it or not, in those days, I was in that hospital 6 months with that leg. They had to break it five times to get a straight one out of it. Mm. Can you imagine that? I didn't think I was ever going to get out of there. Mm. Anyway, we went from there to the town of Lotus up west of Fisher. That's the reason I graduated from Fisher. And he had a house and a lot and a barn, well, outhouses and whatnot, and an orchard and all that, but no money. Well, he might have had some money for a few years. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we lived there from the time I was in the fourth grade till I graduated. Then I come down here. Mm-hmm. Of course, I come down every summer to work to make my clothes, you know, money for clothes and go back to school. Mm-hmm. You know, no income. And she had six boys. My stepmother had six boys of us and a girl. She did a good job. She took care of him, too, you know. Mm-hmm. Of course, we did, too. Then when we come down here, that's when I try to be a pilot, you know, at 42.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell me about that.
Well, I tried to, I wanted to be a pilot. I wanted to be a Navy pilot. Mm-hmm. Anyway, when I went down and, you know, down here at that time, Champaign Post Office, I think they were down underneath there. Well, you have to pass all this. And I passed every written thing, mm-hmm. But I was under, 7 pounds under. And in those days, you know, on fly an airplane, you had to check everything like this, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? Even at one we had. Anyway, you had to weigh a certain pound, and I was, I think I was 9 or 8 pounds under. Mm-hmm. Gave me so many months to do it, so I ate my way in. But when he sent me down there, that's when they caught me. I couldn't get out to get anything to eat. Mm-hmm. So I come back home, and then I enlisted in November. The third, mm-hmm. The third. Went up there, yeah. And I was in the V6 program, and that means 6 years. And reserves, you know what I mean, mm-hmm. U.S. Yeah, U.S. Naval Reserve, 6 years. And anyway, when it come to be, after the war was over out there in Alameda, let's see, was it August they dropped the bomb? I can't remember mm-hmm. now. Anyway, I didn't get out till January. But in the meantime, you had to have so many points. So I asked this lieutenant commander, I said, sir, do I have to stay in? I'm in this V6 program. Well, you can either stay in or you can get out, but you have to be inactive for, you know, the rest of the time, the 48. And I can't think of, I was trying to think of it the other day. One of the presidents here, boy, I can't think of that man's name. He's a real nice man. He was in the V6 program, Navy V6 program. And that's the only other one I ever heard was in it, outside of me. I don't know why, but mm-hmm. I don't know how I got in.
So your commitment when you signed up then was for 6 years.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And so then when it came time to leave the Navy,
I had my points to get out. Uh-huh, uh-huh. But I could also, by being in the V6 program, I could have stayed the 6 years.
Okay.
If I had, I'd have probably made a career out of it. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, I don't want to make a career out of it. Mm-hmm. Well, I think one thing, after being over there, sweating out airplanes, you know, sweating out your men coming back, mm-hmm. you're kind of spastic, you know, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I didn't go back to, well, like Alice said, I went back to business college in 50, was it 50 or 51, Alice? 51, 50? Anyway, oh, after I got out, I was also what do you want to call it, a civilian, and I was an assistant crew chief on B-29s up the field for 6 months.
So did that require you to be in the Navy, or were
no,
you
no,
a civilian?
No, I didn't count. That didn't count. So I just went up there and got a job with them, uh-huh. and that's when I met her. Anyway, when they, you're 6 months, then they had furloughs. I was a 90-day furlough, which all counted, and at that time, I think I went to selling insurance. So 50 or 51, then I went to business college over here. Mm-hmm. And I come over here. Wait a minute, when did I come over here? I had 30 years. Well, I come over here in 51. Mm-hmm. I was in a guided missile program. And then I went into physics. Bardeen and all of them were there. Hey, mm-hmm. I was going to go there Thursday, and I didn't. Anyway, then I went out to Mumford Hall, dean's office, then the bursar's office, then went with the postal thing for a while, come back, it all counted for retirement, and I went to operation maintenance out there. It was accounted out there. And if you'll notice in the paper, something about $17 million, the vice president or president has to cough up to pay the bill.
This is for the university?
For the university, uh-huh. yeah. And that was utilities, you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I was telling them when I left in 81, we were giving them $500,000 for natural gas in those days, $285 for electricity. Can you imagine that?
Well, goodness.
Look how much it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Huge difference.
Yeah. And the operate and maintain the campus went through the operation maintenance was $28 million, 80-81, mm. which was large. Mm-hmm. And what it is now, $65 million, $85 million? Well,
it's
I think I think your utilities are $20 million a year, mm-hmm. I think. Isn't that something? Yeah. Anyway.
Well, So you were disappointed because you couldn't be a pilot, but you did enlist in the Navy.
Yes.
And then where did you take your first training?
First training, you know what? I was up to boot camp. I think it was only there 4 weeks, and they give you 5 day leave down here already. And I come back, John Day here in town. Oh, and Bob Heben and his brother was 19. Bob Heben was 15. Took a birth certificate and changed it. But you know what? He weighed 130 pounds and he was shaving. And he looked older than me. And anyway, we both went to boot camp. Oh, we went to Navy Pier in the aviation school there for, I went over there in December of 42, graduated in June of 43.
Now, what kind of training did they give you while you were
there?
They give
you everything about maintaining airplanes and mm-hmm. fixing airplanes and making parts or doing some, you know, like if you needed a hinge door thing and all that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. do all that, maintenance.
So not only maintaining the plane, but also teaching you how to make the parts?
Yeah, if you had to have them, you know. And then another thing, I think we had a Corsair there. Oh, in those days, we had some two-winged things, too, the people, you know, that you know, where they taught you a lot of stuff on it. Anyway, this one morning, you had to turn that prop around before you could start the airplane or to get the oil out of the bottom cylinders. And you know that backfired and hit one of the men on the head? They had to take that prop off. He knocked that prop out of thing, but didn't hurt him. But boy, it hit him, knocked him out, I think, for a while. I never will forget that.
Now, after you did that training, did they give you even more training? Or?
Well, what happened, we in the meantime, when I was up there, they asked us, they didn't make you do this now. They asked people, do you want to be an aerial gunner? Yes, I wanted to fly, so I'll be an aerial gunner. Mm-hmm. Well, when I was standing in line here and the commander was asking questions, this man above me, he says, do you want to die for your country? Yes. Get out. I come up here, you want to die for your country? And I said, no, I don't. You go on. And I said, sir, how come you did that? He said, die for country. Now, you'll fight like mad. He wouldn't. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the way they looked at it, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, that's interesting.
But, you know, that's the way I looked at it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it was really something. Anyway, then I went out to Alameda. Then Lake Chabot with Robert Stack School, Gunnery School.
Yeah. And what was your training while you were there?
They had a track, railroad tracks. They had a hand car with a target on it, okay? Mm-hmm. And this thing would come in, they'd go out 1,500 miles, 1,000 miles, 500 feet and all that. And they train you with these, I think it's 50 calibers. And you had to shoot this thing. So many, I think it was 4 or 5 weeks we had training like that. And I don't remember if it ever hit in the center or not. I might have, but I don't remember it. But anyway, we graduated. Then we were assigned to Squadron 57. And, Bob wasn't, this little 15-year-old. Anyway, in the meantime, we was in school, he wanted me to turn him in. I said, finish school, then get out. You know, get your job at the airport. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he stayed in. He's come up and said, don't turn me in. So I didn't. Mm-hmm. So we went overseas, and he went somewhere else, I think, with Admiral Calhoun's outfit there, because that's where we were at. And there was 7 of us went to the scouting squadron. But when they signed us there before we left, I said, well, I said, I don't know whether we're going to make this back or not. You get a carrier, dive bombers, the Zeros are knocking them down. You know, I mean, that was the truth. And I was lucky. We were land-based.
When you left California, then, were you on a ship and were you sent to the
Pacific? I was on
a
USS Tabena, and it was a ship that the United States, I think, grabbed from Germany that was made in Holland, had wooden decks on it.
Isn't that interesting?
Anyway, when we get on this thing, this major run the thing. It wasn't a Navy man. There's a troop ship, you know actually what it was. And, okay, you boys are aerial gunners, and they put us in the tubs of the thing.
The tubs meaning that?
Gun tubs. If 20 millimeters, they had 20 millimeters.
Okay, so if the plane is attacked, you're going to
be a gunner. I guess that's what they wanted. Anyway, stand watch. He's on 4 hours and 4 hours off. Man, you know. Anyway, this one, I don't know how many days we were out, spied this periscope. Man, I looked around, and here's what a raft-like thing you can knock off and get on if in case he sunk it. Anyway, the captain bared down on it, and guess what? The Japanese had a periscope on a square raft. Uh-huh. Yeah, and they let them shoot and everything at it, but they didn't sink it. Anyway,
so
we
it was a false thing.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, by being on that, by yourself going over it, you had a zigzag. The zigzag, that's how, you know, you wouldn't let the submarines keep track of you, I guess. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we were on that thing. See, we left there September the 2nd, in 43. Of course, I signed to that in August. We went up to Cook Islands and different places, New Cal, and then went up to New Heredity Groups, Esperitos. Mm-hmm. And while we were there, That's when the Japanese big plane, or I guess it was a scouting plane or something, come over. And, you know, at one, first night I counted 21 lights on him. You know, I could see a shiny thing. It happened twice. Well, the third night, I guess he's trying to keep us awake or something. I don't know. Third night, I wasn't going to get out of bed. Man, it says, Lane, get out of there. I'll put you on a report. And I grabbed my blankets. I went out in the foxhole with my gas mask. I slept the rest of the night.
Now, what was it like being on that transport ship? Was it jam-packed?
You know what? That thing was so old. I probably shouldn't say this, but say you go to the restroom, they had troughs. Oh, you saw that trough, that ship would go like that, and everything go this way and that way underneath. It was terrible. And you could only, the water you could drink was only on 40 minutes a day.
Oh.
So you had to shave with the salt water. Well, of course, William's shaving cream would do it. Mm-hmm. And the shower, if you take a shower, you know, you just didn't have any soap or anything for it. Anyway, you just kind of washed yourself, you know. Anyway, a lot of guys let their beards grow, but I tried it, but the things didn't grow, so I shaved from then on. Anyway, we saw that thing. Oh, we hit this new heavy group. And gosh, I don't know, you look into the island, it's all coconut trees, you know what I mean? Nothing in there. I mean, that's where you look at it. Here comes two Marines in one of these, looks like a big thing going on land and water. He come out, picked us up, take us in. Boy, when you get there, boy, it was just full of people. Bunch of ants, like, you know, but you couldn't tell it from there. And then we went over to Admiral Calhoun's place there. we were waiting for, you know, to get back to New Caledonia, I guess. Anyway, we were out, didn't have anything to do in a way, but they put us in his yard here. He had a little hut, well, we call it a bamboo hut and all that. The nice living room and, you know, kitchen. And he had four Philippines or someone, you know, doing his work. And we had to pick up these coconuts fall on the ground. People probably didn't know this. They bred the mosquito that would bite you. Oh. You know what I mean? Malaria mosquitoes. So you pick those up, put them in a truck, and I think his truck, take them down and take them over to another island. They put all these natives over there, and they take that and make soap out of it. Mm. Yeah. And Pete Palmolive owned all this grove, I guess. Everyone, the CBs cut down the trees, coconut trees. Everyone they cut down, the United States paid Pete Palmolive $25 in those days. Mm. But they would make round things like that, you know, instead of cement, then they'd put these Quonset huts on them. Yeah, that's why they did that. The CBs did that. I never forget that. Anyway, we was out there picking them up one time. This one boy, I think it was Cienza. Boy, that's pretty good, Lane. They pay us to go through school. Probably cost them $5,000 to send them through school. And here we are picking up these darn coconuts. The admiral come out of his house that time. Well, you would have seen an old man like me pick them up? No, sir. I think he's probably 51 or 52.
So Calhoun was the...
He was just something to do with the...
Was he the commander?
He was... Wait a minute. I think I have it down here. Asbury, Commander South Pacific Fleet Air.
Okay.
And...
Now, was he, was
of course, you had another admiral down in New Mayo. That's where President Nixon was. Uh-huh. I forgot his name, but you know. Anyway, it was one man worked in architects at the O&M. I can't think of his name now. He was a farmer's mate, a chief, and he was on down there where Nixon was. Of course, he would tell us that, you know, after that.
So we're talking about Richard Nixon, and he was on.
Pardon? That's
Richard Nixon, who became president, he was on...
Yeah, he was on New Caledonia.
New Caledonia at the time that you were there.
But I was up on the airfield, and he was down here and probably around New Mayo, you know, wherever the admirals had their business, you know what I mean. Anyway, then later on, he went up to some other island, I think, Green Island or something, wasn't it? Might be in his record.
Now, besides having you pick up these coconuts, what else did the Navy... have in store for you?
Well, that's all. We only did that a week or two. Mm-hmm. Then we caught this. I can't think of the ship's name, and I don't have it on here. I can't think of it. It wasn't that one. But while I was there, that's when I was telling you, this Tabena let us off. Then they went up north, probably all the way up New Caledonia, Guadalcanal or something, and they come back. And that's when I looked, and they put a torpedo right where we were, 25 of us on the front of it like this. We bunked right here coming over. Good thing we got off of that thing, wasn't it?
No, I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
The Japanese put a torpedo through it.
Oh, the Japanese sunk that ship?
Yeah.
Oh,
they didn't sink it. They put it in and they just tie it off and they come back.
Ah.
And I thought, boy, we got off that thing in a good time. It probably happened another week or two after we got off of it. Mm-hmm. I never forget that. Yeah. Then we were on this one ship going down. And what was, most of the time, when you cross the equator, they really initiate you, the Navy. Boy, they'd throw you in the garbage, they'd do anything. This, I don't know, maybe that was on the ship that the Army got. Maybe it was on the Franklin, I don't know, I forgot. But this captain or major was Army guy. We didn't have to do all that. But they give us a little card I have at home, showed that I was on the equator.
Now, how many times did you cross the equator?
I went down once, then back, then down once, then back again. Yeah.
So we were on New Caledonia, and then
we hit there first. Okay. When I was on the ship there, we hit a reef. Blue. They should have waited for what do they call these men? I forget what they call them. You know, when you go in the harbors now,
tenders
put a man on there, and he brings you in. Anyway, they hit this thing, and the ship went like this. What happened, it knocked off the bottom plate, but they could seal it off. And I guess, they just sealed it off. Anyway, we slipped in there. And lo and behold, while we were going over, they had a bunch of, I forgot what kind of trucks they call them. Anyway, for the Army and the Marines and all that, and this is all full of candy. Anyway, this major... Boy, you didn't hardly eat hardly anything on that ship. Well, we found out it was there, and next thing you know, we was taking the candy out of that thing and using it. And the man would bake bread, we'd go down and steal the bread. We never got caught. But I don't know why he did that. Well, I guess the Army ate those silly things, you know. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we did that. I think when they got that thing unloaded, they were surprised all that candy was going all bad. Because we ate a lot of it out there. I never will forget that.
So you were on New Caledonia for how long?
Well, we were just there probably 2 days. Mm-hmm. Then that's when we met Desperados. Well, meantime, my squadron was there, but I didn't know it, or none of us men knew that. And what's happened, the reason we probably didn't go to 57 earlier, you had to wait till some of these men were shipped back, then you'd come in, see? That's probably what happened. I think we were up here at the Admiral's place there maybe 2 weeks, and then we went in there, yeah.
I'm sorry, so you went from New Caledonia to Esperito?
Yeah.
It's Esperito, is that correct?
Yeah, Esperito, that's the New Hebrides group.
Okay, and that's another island, and how far, is that correct, another island?
Pardon?
Was that another island?
That was part of the New Hebrides group.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how far away then would that be from?
Oh, boy.
From New Caledonia. Would it take a while to get there, or was it?
I think it was 3 or 4 days getting down there.
Okay, so
it's
still a major trip.
Yeah, Anyway, when we went down there, they picked us up in trucks. Then we went up there to 57. But in the meantime, that some of these men hadn't left yet, so what they did, we did everything. You might work in the mess hall. You might work outside here, do this and do that. Anyway, then later on, before I signed to my plane, you know, went out there too. Anyway, the captain found out the way I was raised that I could set tables and stuff. Mm-hmm. Follow me? And they had three chiefs. You had electrician, chief, and then you had the one with the line, then you had melody. Then when Admiral Halsey would come in, his man was a chief, you know, engineer on his, and he was there, and I set the table for four. Oh. I did that for a month or two, until they found the man that, you know, they had to wait for the man to come in to do it. And actually, I think I only worked an hour each time, you know, because you'd set the table, you'd take the stuff over, and they'd wash it for you, and all you had to do was put it away. It was quite a thing. But then I'd go down and sometime work on the plane, too. But if not, I'd go over on the islands. Two of us would go over on the island where the natives were, and we'd swim with them. And the natives couldn't understand we wore our trunks. They went with no clothes. The men, but no women around.
Was the swimming recreational, or was it to catch fish?
Just something to do. Something to do, kill time, yeah.
Now, the plane,
I think it's about 5 miles. You'd walk 5 miles or something. Just something to do.
So that sounds like a very healthy thing to be able to walk.
But these men, these natives couldn't get over. We wore our trunks. They didn't wear anything.
Did they speak any English?
No, no. If it was, I didn't understand them. But I mean, you know, you
did they understand what was happening in?
Now, if they did, I don't know that either. Uh-huh. But I know a lot of times. See, we always had a theater every night outside, and sometimes you'd be sitting in a theater, and all these natives would come in like that.
Oh, interesting!
They sit down front and watch that movie. But you know what? When that movie was over, they disappeared like that, and you didn't see them. Uh-huh. They just come in on us. Yeah, it was amazing. They were amazing people. Over 7 days over there, I think it was 6 to 7 of us in a group, you know, you would be down in the field, and every 7th day you had the day off, and they give you a command car and a case of beer, you know, and we'd go all over this island. Anyway, we was going across the Theo Pass. And it was, in the mornings, it was open this way to go over the mountain. Then the afternoon, it was open that way to get back. So we go over. In the meantime, we stopped and visit this native village. And you know what? We walked into that village, and bam! Boy, there's people that disappeared just like that. Of course, we had guns on us, 45s. And I looked around, and all I saw was a little baby laying on the floor. You know, so we sat there in this nice place, clean place. Pretty soon they started coming back in. Mm-hmm. And this chief was 90 years old in those days. That's unusual. Mm-hmm. And he come over and he talked to us and everything. And he saw that we weren't, you know, causing any trouble. But you know what? He gave us a big thing of bananas, the green ones, you know. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we take those back. Of course, you put them underneath the bed, you know, where it's dark and it'd ripen. Then we went back, we took these garbage cans, new ones, and had him put his bananas in there, put the lid on there, and ripen them up. He thought that was pretty good. But that old man, he let us know what has happened in his young life. They killed the white people, and they ate the people. Yeah.
How did he
anyway,
did
the
he
Catholic ministry come over, and, you know, and he was one of them, you know, they saved probably, you know, religion and all that. Because, and you know what, he had one of the biggest shells, I think must have been that big around and that deep. Where he found it, I don't know. When you walked into his church, that's when he used the water to go like this. And he said that, he said, you know what, they come over here. And when he was younger, and they, you know, religion and all this, and taught him God and everything, but he says, you know what? And some of that thing is, you don't worry about things, God will take care of you. He said, my men won't work. You know, he was that way. It was really something. We talked to him once or twice, I think, all the time. But then we went over to Theo. 7 of us go into this real nice, probably see it up north of these big white homes-like things. It was a saloon is what it was, I guess, or a hotel. We went in there and sat down. We wanted a beer. No serve Americans. No serve Americans. Gosh. These two boys with me from Chicago, they were a little older and everything. Well, you know what? he wouldn't serve us, and they grabbed a couple of bottles, and I swear there was a mirror, must have been 10 or 20 feet like this, then down like that. Bam! Boy, they broke that son of a gun. Mm. Anyway, we left. So anyway, when we come back, General Rose was the head of the army on there. He put that off no limits. Mm-hmm. Admiral Halsey said, hey, the Navy took this island, they go anywhere they want to go. So we would go back. Mm-hmm. But it's funny, they mined nickel, on you know, then ship it out on this Thiel Pass, on Thiel.
Now, were the people at Thiel, were they not native people? They were from another country?
They were French, and they were, what do you want, what was that, what did they call them? Oh, boy, it was a name.
Not Creole.
Vichy French. They were Vichy French. Okay. Yeah, that's right. They were Vichy French. Yeah.
Oh, that's very interesting.
But I'll tell you what, they served us beer. But I don't know who paid for that broken thing. I didn't break it, but we didn't pay for it.
Were the Vichy French involved in the mining?
In the mining, yeah. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the reason they wouldn't serve us. You know, they were Vichy French. Hmm. Yeah, also said that the Navy grabbed this island. He said they go anywhere they want. So we went everywhere we went. We went on to one place. Oh, we had a... I forgot, I got a picture of it. Anyway, I forgot what they call this boat. It's a boat. 6 or 7 of my pictures are on there. Anyway, we go on this one island. And holy cow, I stepped out of there and there was snakes, coral snakes they call them. They were poisonous. Man, they were everywhere. So we got back, went to this one island. There were deer on there. There was any kind of animal you wanted to shoot at was there. So anyway, later on, killed a couple of deer. I wasn't with them, but a couple of deer and brought them back, and they'd put them in the camp there, and they'd, you know, cut it open and everything, put it in the, we had a big walk-in refrigerator, I guess. Anyway, put it in there. Anyway, Halsey says, you boys can't do that anymore. He said, that belongs to the governor of the island. That's his hunting ground.
Oh,
so we didn't go back anymore. Mm-hmm. That was pretty good. But they didn't get after us for it. I never will forget that. They were good people.
So Admiral Halsey was also located on...
Well, he would come down, to talk to these admirals down here and then admiral here. You know, I don't know. I mean, that's probably what I, you know.
Do you want to talk about one of the scenes that you witnessed at an airfield? Was that on that
That was on Tontuta Air Base in New Caledonia.
Okay, so that was in New Caledonia, not on this island.
Yeah,
and what was it that happened that you saw?
Pardon?
What was it that you saw when you were there at that airfield?
That's when they landed to probably visit, you know, have a meeting with this admiral here.
And
that's
when they came down. Who was in the plane?
That was Admiral King. He was the head of in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
Then Admiral Nimitz, Admiral Halsey, and Admiral Calhoun, all four of them come out of that.
So they all came to New Caledonia. Do you know what year that was?
It was in early 45, because I left there in June of 45. Uh-huh. It was between January and June in there. I never will forget
So you had seen them
deep-plane. I was on a four-wheel, what we call a mule you tow airplanes with. I was driving this thing, and that's when he had those there, and I just stopped and took a look. I thought, I'm going to see these people. But, you know, in the meantime, before that, Admiral Halsey's plane landed. He had a four-engine. It was a B-24, but a single tail, and we call them something else. I forgot what we call them. Anyway, he had an engine out on this thing. So there was a wrecked B-24 over here. So the boys went over and was working on this thing, taking that engine out and going to take his out and put this one on there. Anyway, this big old, I don't know what he was, a colonel or major or what, he come over. What are you Navy guys doing there? You can't take it. That belongs to us. Well, Admiral Halsey said to come over and take it. Oh, he said, forget it. I never forget the guy saying that. Anyway, they run that up. They had to run that up about 6 or 7 hours. And anyway, this one man, and we were working on something there. Like, well, here's a saddle here, say. You drop something, ask them to pick it up, and then Halsey would hand it back up to him. Of course, we didn't know it was him at that time. Nobody knew that. But you had to run that thing up 6 hours to really
What does that mean?
Well, you make sure it was all running and everything. Mm-hmm. You change engines, you had to make sure that thing was, you know, working. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, you did. You did that about 3 days straight. You know, make sure it's going to be all right.
Now, I interrupted your flow. We went back to New Caledonia, but you were really on the island of...
Esperitas before then.
Right.
Yeah.
And when you were flying, would you like to talk about that experience?
Well,
when
you come, there was two planes, you know, you fly like this, you know, like this. Okay, you were up around 4 hours, and you had to cover so much area. But, you know, planes, even today, I mean, people don't know, you don't fly like this, you fly like that, you know that. And of course, the world's round. You planes fly like that. You know, when you leave New York, you're going to California and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, you would go approximately, we cruise 120 knots. That's about 150 mile an hour, 140 maybe. Anyway, you go an hour this way, an hour that way. And in the meantime, you're looking, you know, everything.
And what are you looking for?
Well, subs or, you know, anything. Anyway, mm-hmm. then you go 4 hours here, and then you'd come back, see? You'd only stay up about 4 hours, a little over 4 hours.
So...
We only had 400 gallon of gas, I think.
How low were you flying in order to be able to see?
I would say we were up at probably 2,000 feet, maybe 2,500 feet.
Mm-hmm. Now, if...
But we never had to go up to 10,000. I went up to 10,000 once on a test hop. But you couldn't stay up over 10,000 feet because you didn't have oxygen, you know. Mm-hmm. And then I think we had oxygen bottle, but you never went that high.
What type of plane were you in?
That was a Dauntless dive bomber.
A Dauntless dive bomber.
Yeah, that was one of the first.
Uh-huh. And
that sunk more tonnage than everything in the Pacific.
How
this time.
How would you be able to see? Was there in the floor? Was there?
No,
a
you just look out the cockpit.
Okay, so you could see easily out of the cockpit.
Oh yeah, yeah, uh-huh. yeah. Yeah, you're out of the cockpit.
And you were behind the pilot?
Yes, uh-huh, uh-huh. Yeah.
Now,
and we had twin 30s.
Twin 30s meaning guns?
Yeah, twin 30 machine guns.
Okay, so there
he
were
had
there
a
one
twin
or 50s two more...
in the nose.
Okay, so there was someone in the nose.
Yeah, the pilot controlled the 250s. We controlled the 230s.
Uh-huh.
He controlled the 100 bombs underneath the wings, one here and one there, and the 500-pounder underneath the belly.
Okay.
500-pounder.
So
if you saw a sub, you would try to sink him with it.
Okay, so there were three people in this plane?
No, just two.
Two people?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Just two of them.
And
yeah.
During the time that you flew those, did you find any submarines?
No. I said we were doing scouting. And what we were there for... You know, here's Australia here, mm-hmm. and here's New Caledonia, mm-hmm. okay? The reason they had us mainly there, they didn't want the Japanese to come back around probably there. I mean, that's what they told us, you know, mm-hmm. and that's what we were mainly there for.
Mm-hmm.
Now, before I got in there, they sunk a sub, but 25 men got off of it, and they captured them. And you know what? The man said, well, Lloyd, we had them in a fence like this, and they thought we was going to kill them. They didn't, you know. Anyway, when that squadron went over, they had these twin-wing plane with the platoons on it. It could land on land or water. That's when they first went over, I don't know, maybe, oh, I'd say 41, I don't know, when they declared war. Maybe 42, and then they changed the Dauntless dive bombers. And every time these aircraft carriers would get Alice's TBMs and all that stuff, that was the newer ones. Then they would give us the old ones, mm-hmm. different places. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, yeah.
Now, what island were you flying from?
New Caledonia.
From New Caledonia,
yeah,
for that activity.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
And then, so how long did you do that?
I got there in November of 43. I was signed to them in August, but I think it was November before we really got settled and everything. Mm-hmm. And I flew... Well, when I was plane captain, I only had to fly 4 hours a month.
Hmm.
Anyway, when you're playing, then I made second class petty officer, and the rest of the boys were third class. And then the chief would take off, and then I have to take over. And that's, you know, you had the flights See, here's, I'll show you. Well, I mean, I'll just read this to you.
Okay.
I'll just read this to you if I can. Okay, here's how we would start off at 0515 to 0845. We sent up four planes. Mm-hmm. Then 7:30 to 11 o'clock, we'd send up another two planes. And these people would come back at 8:45, this 7:30 would come back at 11. Then later on at 10 o'clock, you'd send one back, send two planes back up, and then they might only stay up, well, they're supposed to stay up 4 hours, but they had 13:30 or whatever. Then you send up another two, let's see, it'd be 12 planes during that whole day. Mm-hmm. And I don't know when I was plane captain, or whether the other men felt this or not, when I sent my plane up, I had number 10 right here, Lieutenant Sample. And I always sweat them out. I don't know why.
You always what?
I sweat them. Well, I call it sweat out. You're worried about it.
Yeah.
You know what
uh-huh.
I mean?
Uh-huh.
I'd rather be flying in the darn thing. Mm-hmm. You sweat them out for 3 or 4 hours. Mm-hmm. And maybe over the period of time, maybe that's what helped me get my, I don't know. Anyway, I had a spastic colon. And here's my plane number 10. Then, actually, you're supposed to throw this away. You know, when you're through with it, because, you know, you didn't want the Japanese to have this if they come in. Anyway, what we had available, now we never had any combat, but our planes were either getting worked on or something happened to them. And the sample here, the flight officer put down available, two gas trucks and one bicycle if the tar was fixed. He wrote that, and I thought, boy, I'm going to keep that thing. You know, and I did. Well, this is a Xerox copy.
So when these planes would go up, would they be following a different pattern?
Well, yeah, different uh-huh. squares, you know. Uh-huh. You know, like say they were there, I don't know how many square miles. Well, you could figure it out if there's, mm-hmm. well, let's see. I never figured this out. 4, 6, 8, 10, 12. Say each one of them had a cover 400 miles. Say mm-hmm. That's over 4,000 miles. And yeah, okay, you were in sectors. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's how you did it. You know, you covered so many square miles.
Now, during the time that you were involved with this, did any of the planes have any problems?
Yes, we had one boy, and he was a plane captain, and he was out, and the plane coughed, was going down. The pilot told him to jump. And I think at 1,500 feet, the pilot did jump, but the boy probably thought the plane was come out. Well, when I call him boy, we were boys, you know what mm-hmm. I mean. Anyway, when the pilot hit the water, his chute opened and, boy, it saved him. Mm. This boy waited too damn late and it killed him. Just, mm-hmm. you know, if you're up that high and hit the water, it's like mm-hmm. hitting the ground. Mm-hmm. It killed him. And you know what? They had him buried on Noumea. A cemetery in New Caledonia in a white thing. And of course, they sent it to his parents, probably killed in action, you know, mm-hmm. actually. But I don't know whether they ever went back and sent the body back here mm-hmm. or not. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Some of them did. But I know he's buried there. Yeah. That was too bad, you know. Mm-hmm. You know. But he had confidence in the plane. He thought it would take off, you know. Mm-hmm. But the pilot couldn't wait any longer. So, see, the pilot would have been dead, too.
Now, so the pilot was rescued and...
Well, yeah, they rescued him. But you know what? After that happened, this destroyer rescued him. Mm. But they were out so far, it took 3 days or 4 days for that thing to get to here. Mm-hmm. And then after, I don't know whether Admiral Halsey or any admirals or something had to do with it, then we got what we call a flying duck. You know, it was a plane that would land on water mm-hmm. or land on that. A great big thing like this. Okay, after that, if somebody went down, they'd land, take it, and bring it back. Mm. You know, yeah. Mm-hmm. So we kept that thing there. Well, we never had to use it again. We never had to use it. But that boy there, that was something. Anyway, I would say to me, there was a lot of pressure. I mean, of course, I was young probably. I don't mm-hmm. know. Now, some of these boys, By me maybe having a father, you know, the way I didn't have any mm-hmm. father to tell me. And then you had to take care of him. You worried about him. You mm-hmm. did this and that. And then these boys from Chicago, boy, I said, what did you guys do? Well, Lane, if you wanted to buy a part for your bicycle, we'd go out and steal that thing and sell it to you. That's not, no kidding. That's the way they were. Or you want a part for that automobile? We'd go get it for you. He was and one boy, Nincevich, his mother dealt cards for Al Capone's place. And you know, that man could take a deck of cards, four of us sitting here. He'd give this man a straight, this man a flush, this man three of a kind, and he'd give himself four of a kind. He could do that with a deck of cards, but now he never pulled it on us. But every month, he went over to the Army guys. They were black men, and they were an engineer group, real nice people, real good. But he'd go over there payday, and he'd come back with a bunch of money. Now, but he didn't do that on us. I almost mm-hmm. fell over how he did that. I still don't know how he did it today when he'd take a deck of cards and do that. You know?
So your recreation on the island was things like the...
We played baseball, softball. Well, wait a minute. We played more softball than baseball. Then if you like to play like Alex, they had basketballs, but I didn't play that much. Mm-hmm. Then we had, they gave us 2 bottles of beer at night. I sold mine for 10 cents a piece. Anyway, after I'm over there, say you're doing this for a year, the flight surgeon say, Lane, you ought to drink a beer once in a while, you know, like this. And you know what? He was right. You drink a beer, too? That, by golly, you was just, you know, relaxed. That was something. And you know what? I drank a lot of beer up till I was married. Well, when I'm in Alice, I didn't drink too much. But anyway, if I felt nervous, I'd, you know, do that. But then later on, I went to Dr. Hall here in town. He used to be the head of the medical school thing here. Mm-hmm. And he was the best heart man. And I had a fast heart. Anyway, he gave me some little phenobarb, you know, that would calm me. He knew what I had. He said, Lord, he said, you got that spastic colon? And yeah. And I doctored him until he went out on a cruise, not a cruise, but out here at the Rocky Mountains or somewhere out there and ride horses. He fell off and hit his head and killed him. He's only about 61, 62.
Yeah. I remember that.
Yeah, you remember that? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was a big loss for
our community. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jack was his first name, and I knew him real well, so I had him doctor me all the time because I had a fast heart and all that. Mm-hmm. But he'd give me some phenobarb. And, you know, it was unplug you, whatever it was, mm-hmm. you know. So, you know. Anyway, when I was discharged, when I come back after the 20-some months, you had to fill out a medical thing. You know, they asked you a bunch of questions. Mm-hmm. You have a broken leg? Yeah. Anything wrong? I'm more nervous than normal. And I thought, boy, they'll send me to Colorado for 2 weeks, and boy, I can fish and all that. And that doctor says, well, he said, that leg bother you? And I said, well, I could tell you change of weather and everything. Why didn't you tell us we'd kept you in the States? Just like that. Hmm. But I wouldn't want to stay in the States. Anyway, when I was 43, that all quit. But anyway, they come back, let's see. Anyway, when he was talking to me there, and he said, oh, you're nervous. And I said, yes. And I said, I thought, sure. He said, you know, they've given these guys R&R for 2 weeks in Colorado fishing and taking mm-hmm. life easy. Anyway, oh, you're going home for 30 days. You get in bed at 10 o'clock every night and just relax. Now, I said, I haven't been home for almost 3 years, which I didn't do that. But I drank a lot of beer for 30 days. Mm-hmm. But I didn't bother anyone. You know, just calm you know. Mm-hmm. It worked, though. You might drink 6 or 7 bottles during the day in those days, but by golly, it worked. Yeah, it did. I slept good, though, I'll say that. Anyway, my uncle, I was staying with him. We was over here in this Pop's restaurant there on Main Street. I come in, I ordered a beer, drank that son of a gun, I ordered another one, and he's sitting there. God darn, Lord, you're drinking a lot of beer. I said, well, it calms you down. Of course, he drank, too. I mean, he drank a few of them.
Now, when you were in the military and out of the U.S., did you keep in touch with people back home?
Yes.
How did you do that?
I probably shouldn't say this when I don't know whether it's Poplar and all the places it was at, but I think when I left Dover, I was writing probably 10 ladies, two here. I was writing my stepmother, and I was writing all my, see, I had a real brother in the Army, and a stepbrother in the Marines, and John Day, you know, went in with us. I would write him letters. He's in submarines. And there's the lasso. I think I was only writing about one or two people. Mm-hmm. My father died in September 44, and I was working on an airplane with Fitzgerald. You know what? Fitzgerald was one of the prop men at Hollywood out there. But he was a mechanic. Anyway, what was I going to say there?
So did you hear at that time then about your father's
death? Oh, that's right. I was working here on this plane, and the two chiefs come out in the car and took his thing out of his pocket and handed it to me, and cablegram. Put it in my pocket, went back to work. About 40 minutes later, they come out. Chief Mullen said, "Lloyd, you know what's in that?" And I said, "Yeah, it's my father, I bet." He said, "Yes, it is." And it just seemed like that knocked the props out of me, too. Mm-hmm. Maybe that made me more spasty, I don't know. Anyway, he said, "You're going back." So I get in the car, and I tell him about, you know, what happened all this time. Mm-hmm. "Well, Lloyd, then you probably expected this." I said, "Well, not this soon," you know, stuff like mm-hmm. that. But it seemed like when that happened, oh, then my stepmother remarried in October, November. Mm-hmm. So I sent her some money to help, you know. Well, anyway, I stopped it. She sent a thing there. Well, we could have used the money and all that. And I thought, well, you're getting married. I didn't say that to her, but she's married. Anyway, just seemed like I knocked the props out of me because I was with him so much for probably 10 until I went in the Navy, about 18.
And plus the fact that you weren't home,
were away. Yeah, that's right,
so many thousands of miles away.
Yeah. But you know what? The other men was different than I was. I think the reason, now my stepbrother went like that, but I mean, I felt that I didn't have a father to teach me anything, and I felt like that leans awful quiet, which I probably was with them, I don't know. Of course, I didn't drink in crowds like they did. You know, I roller skated a lot in the States. And, but this 15-year-old, I told you he'd shaved, he weighed 130 pounds. He dated women all the way from 20 to 35 up here in Chicago. I thought the darnest thing I ever saw. Oh, we were out. He drank too much wine. So we come out. We're waiting for, trying to hail a cab. Anyway, here he is dancing and doing this and that. You know, a woman come up. "The heck's the matter with that goddamn sailor and all that?" Anyway, you know what? There's a man over there, and she hollered at him, and he was a detective. And I said, "Wait a minute." I said, "We're going back to Navy Pier," and I said, "I will take him back." He says, "Okay," and we grabbed a cab and went back. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that woman should have said a darn word myself, but she did, you know. I thought that was terrible. Bob, he was something.
Now, you had mentioned a little while ago that when you came back home, that they sent you home directly.
Well, we come home. I left there in June sometime, latter part of June. We hit Pier 2, that we come out of Pier 2, you know, to go over. Anyway, I think it was 6 or 7. Anyway, we come down. I was the highest rank, so I'm down first. I don't know why. But anyway, we didn't have any what you call clothes, uniforms or anything. And we just had work clothes. Anyway, that's when the commander, I went down there, and here's this blue bus in a band playing for who wouldn't have it. And I come down there, and he come over and greeted us. I said, "Well, what's this all about?" He said, "They said you, seven guys rode us so darn long, they said come and greet you," just like that. I almost fell over. But they paid for our uniforms. Took us over and had it tailored and everything. They were real nice. Yeah, he was. Then, were allowed to bring back 10 cartons of cigarettes at 45 cents a piece. So we hit this new thing here, and this warrant officer, or chief, well, he might have been a warrant officer, he's all blue, I mean gold or something. Anyway, you can only take out 2 packs of cigarettes. And anyway, I figured, boy, you're talking about umpteen carton of cigarettes. And Ocienza from Chicago, I said, you know what, we're going to do this. We took a parachute bag and we put 40 carton in this thing. What are you going to do, Lane? I said, we're going up in officer's territory. Of course, you weren't allowed up there. Anyway, we set outside here. And I waited till a pilot come along, and he had campaign things here. He was a lieutenant commander, and I told him, I said, sir, I says, I'm in trouble. And he saw, you know, what we had, but I didn't have these on, I just had my things, you know. Anyway, he says, well, what can I do for you? And I said, you know what? I told him about what happened. I said, they said we could bring back 10 carton overseas. This man says, you can only take 2 packs out. And, you know, you could hide them in your socks maybe, but anyway, he said, what do you want me to do? I said, I want you to carry them out because they're not going to ask you. He said, well, he did it for me, put him in a cab for me. I said, sir, you want some cigarettes? Nope. He said, go ahead. Now, see, if I had carried them, they wouldn't let me take them out. Anyway, I sold mine, whatever I had up here in Chicago, waiting on a train, I sold them for $45. I don't know what he did with his. And that's something. But anyway, it was quite an experience, though. And I was happy to serve and all that, but I was one of the lucky ones, because I figured I never did know what happened. The other, say, 18 men was with us that went over. I don't know what today, mm-hmm. except Bob. Mm-hmm. And Bob did come over here in 51 and knocked on my door, and we visited for a while, yeah. Then Titus Boy went to college here. Two of the pilots picked up their masters here, and the one boy, I met in Norman, Oklahoma. That was Advanced Engine School. We went there. And he was here on Wright Street and Green. And we come up with a car. I was selling insurance. And he hollered at me. So we went over and talked to him. And I happened to be down in there when they had all these officers and the can and everything. They gave him the Navy Cross. And what happened? He was on a PBY, a flying boat, and they landed. The engine went wrong, and the guys were working on it, and these Japanese come over, going to take them over. He grabbed a machine gun and killed them all. By God, they gave him the Navy Cross. They said he saved that plane. Yeah, yeah, that was something. He was something.
What do you think was the end result or what did you take away from that experience, or how did that influence your life?
I think one thing, it taught you to be with people, you know what I mean, mm-hmm. and work with people. Mm-hmm. And you admired them, you know what I mean, mm-hmm. and respect people. But when I look back, I had a lot of good times, though, don't get me wrong, mm-hmm. you know what I mean. But I felt we had and they did too, we had too much pressure on it. I mean, for young people, probably. Mm-hmm. Was it older? Maybe wouldn't it? I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I always felt I had a lot of pressure on it. Mm-hmm. But now some of them could sit underneath the airplane and smoke the cigarettes and hear you, like that sheet you have there. Mm-hmm. You have maybe 5 sheets to check on this plane. They would sit there, smoke. Me, I went around, pulled the things open and check them. Maybe I shouldn't have done it. I don't know. But I thought, well, I got to do this.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Of course, mm-hmm. that was part of your work.
It sounds like you were very responsible.
Well, and maybe that's the reason they always let me have something. I don't mm-hmm. know. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they did. Well, you know what? I didn't have, I had 85 semester hours in 50, 51 maybe, with Mr. Colbert's college here, you know, commercial college over on 4th Street. Mm-hmm. And Dana had gone through here. His father was president of the college, went through here, and his uncle too. And they were one of the superintendent schools when they started that years and years ago, back in the I would say in the 30s, late 30s. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I had higher accounting than business. And by me doing my job right and everything, when it come time to graduate, the other men that was vets too, some of them, not all of them, they didn't complete all this here, and they had a diploma, but it wasn't signed. I think out of six men, I had a signed diploma.
Mm.
Yeah, on account I finished this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Here. And maybe, I don't know. But anyway, when I come over to university, then when I come back to O&M, they give me four ladies, four young women, and we had key punchers in those days. Remember?
Yes.
Anyway, and then I had a girl out here did some posting. And next thing you know, probably a year, maybe, I don't know, maybe 2 years or maybe 5 years. Anyway, I was with them. How long was I with them? From 20 years, I think. Anyway, who was picked to go to labor and relations school? Floyd.
Oh, that's
almost
great.
Fell over. Yeah, mm-hmm. So I got 15 credits from them, from Professor Wolf. Yeah.
Your hard work paid off.
Yeah, I got 15. But a lot of people probably made more money than I did. Well, as accountants in those days, you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. But you know what? I was accountant one. But I was way up on the list all the time, where if you got accountant two or three, you start down here. But I was always up high. So I couldn't complain. I didn't get rich or anything, but we did all right.
Henry is going to change tape. Would you like to complete the interview, or would you?
Well, we better complete it.
We don't have to do that. Is